with the midterms less than a week away, a new survey captures Americans' views towards election security. According to the Pew Research Center, about 90% feel at least somewhat confident about their local poll workers. However, only about 70% feel that way about U.S. election officials. And people seem really concerned about foreign hacking. Two-thirds say it's at least somewhat likely that Russia or other foreign governments will try to meddle in the midterms. 55% said they're either not too confident or not confident at all that election systems are secure from hacking. The Department of Homeland Security provides a free assessment to states that checks for cybersecurity vulnerabilities, but according to ABC News, only 21 states, and that does include Wisconsin, have taken them up on it. Charles Stewart is a professor of political science at Massachusetts Institute of Technology and founder of MIT's Election Data and Science Lab. He worked on a report this summer that calls for the use of paper ballots to avoid election hacking. Charles, welcome to Central Time.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
So how concerned are you about the midterms being hacked?
I'm concerned, as everybody should be, that, you know, the world is a dangerous place and there are, you know, the potential for hacking. At the same time, my sense is that state and local officials have taken this security challenge seriously. And I think one could argue that this election will be, we'll see kind of security measures at a level that we've never seen before in the conduct of elections.
And we'll get into what those might look like. But I want to go back to the word hacked, because that gets used so much. When we say hacked in terms of elections, are we talking about someone breaking into computer systems and changing vote totals or not letting someone vote for a particular candidate on electoral voting machines? What are we talking about specifically?
Well, you know, I mean, that's there's a number of ways of approaching that question, and you're right that the word hack is a useful shorthand to some degree, but it also obscures a lot of what goes on. I think that in general, if we were to go outside of the realm of elections, we would think about hacking as being the intrusion into a computer system in order to get that system to do something it's not supposed to be doing. And so in the world of election hacking, it seems to me that properly that refers to things like breaking into the computers that help to run elections, whether they be the voting machines or they be the computers that help to manage the voter registration systems. And I think that's properly called hacking. There's some other things that happen with elections that are related to computers, but I don't know that they're exactly hacking. Properly. So an example might be a lot of the kind of disinformation that has been leaking into social media. I think it probably obscures things to call those efforts hacking. That sounds to me like propaganda using a new platform.
Well, and that's interesting you brought that up, because one of the topics that kind of gets tied into all this is Russia's influence on the 2016 elections, and the term meddling has often been used. Is that what you're talking about when you talk about that not quite hacking but still affecting elections?
Yes, and I think, you know, when you dive deeply into this, you discover that there is, in fact, a gray area in all of these. And so, you know, the first distinction is between meddling in the campaign, you think about it, that is disinformation, versus trying to mess up the administration of the elections through attacking the machines and getting them to do something bad. But even then, when there's an attack on the machines, sometimes it looks like those attacks are really more about meddling. To give you a quick example, in 2016, there were efforts, there were successful efforts to break into the voter registration system in Illinois. But it looks like the purpose really of that break-in was not to alter voter registration records, but rather to get caught and to demonstrate to the world that it was possible to break into that system and really to spook people.
So just proving they could get through the door, basically.
And get through the door. If we can get through the door here, maybe we've gotten through the door other places. You don't know.
And that sows distrust in the system itself.
It does. And I think that we've seen some evidence of that, or at least attempts to sow that sort of distrust. And it also strikes me that, you know, one of the ways in which we can kind of at least either knit together the trust in the system or understand it better, is to make these distinctions between, well, what is meddling, what is hacking, what are the types of things that need to be done to address one as opposed to the other, because these are all very different types of things.
We're talking with Charles Stewart right now. He's a professor of political science at MIT and founder of MIT's Election Data and Science Lab. And we're talking about election security in the very close run-up to the midterm elections. So, Charles, in this very tech-heavy world that we live in, how difficult is it to properly secure our elections?
Well, I mean, that's how hard is it to secure our elections? I think it's both very hard and at the same time a doable thing in the following sense. It's hard because elections are distributed; they happen in a multitude of modes. There's a lot of details to be dealt with, and so if you're an election official, you need to worry about the security of the machines. The voting machines, you need to worry about the security of the computer equipment that run the voter registration systems. There's a lot of details to take care of. So on the one hand, it's just, back when I was growing up, there was that famous Ed Sullivan Act where the guy would come in and try to twirl all the plates on the poll.
Mm-hmm.
And that's sort of what, I mean, and so running elections is sort of like that, and securing everything requires keeping a lot of plates going. At the same time, elections are not the only area of information technology, in which there are dangers. And there are pretty well-established techniques that election officials can follow in order to take at least the first and second cut at battening down the hatches and making it such that their election system, in the county or the town or wherever, is as secure as it could be, given current best practices.
And as someone who looks at these issues, in your opinion, what are some of the most effective ways that elections officials can help preserve the integrity of the vote?
Well, I think at a 30,000, there's different levels of this. At 30,000 feet, the committee that I was on that you made reference to emphasized the use of paper as the primary source for voting. And for states and localities that are relying on paper ballots, that's a very robust system for counting ballots. If there end up being problems with the scanners, say, which are computers, then you have the paper that at last resort you can hand count. And so having robust backup systems at an operational level is a very important thing to do. There are other things that election officials should be doing, as should all local government officials. For instance, they should be instituting multi-factor authentication for logging onto critical systems or onto email, and having training of local staff not to fall for phishing attacks and those sorts of things. But this is not really unique to elections. Mm-hmm. These are challenges and problems and solutions that state and local governments have had to encounter already. So part of it is just kind of catching up with the rest of state and local administration.
Charles Stewart is with us. He's a professor of political science at MIT and founder of MIT's Election Data and Science Lab. We're discussing election security ahead of next week's midterms and what states are doing to protect the integrity of their voting systems. You can weigh in at 800-642-1234. How concerned are you about election hackers or voter fraud? Are you confident in your election officials' abilities to smoothly run next week's vote? And what changes would you like to see to ensure our elections are as secure as possible? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email us at ideas@wpr.org. We'll continue the conversation in just a bit here on Central Time. We're continuing our discussion on election security with Charles Stewart. He's a professor of political science at MIT and founder of MIT's Election Data and Science Lab. And Charles, you mentioned just before we broke that there are some, in some ways, very basic ways that we can shore up our election system. One is having backups of some sort, and the other is basic literacy about online safety. Are there other ways that states could be doing this to really secure our voting system?
Well, one of the things that many states have been doing, and you made a bit of a reference to it from the ABC News report, is that states can do a top-to-bottom review of all of their cybersecurity practices and the security of their voting systems. And I know that states themselves have either through the DHS or through the private vendors or internally have been doing that. And so, doing that sort of thing. Another really interesting set of exercises that states and localities are beginning to do are tabletop exercises to basically game out what an election official does whenever they are attacked. There is a project at the Harvard Kennedy School called Defending Digital Democracy, and they've created a way for states and localities to run simulations with local officials where the game players throw in what are called interventions where, maybe there's something wrong with the computer, maybe social media has been hacked, something like that. And the election officials can problem solve through this process. So I think, there's getting to be a playbook that state and local officials can draw from as they prepare for elections. But at the end of the day, you mentioned something that I think is really critical, and that is that we can't have the expectation that there will be no attacks on our election system. So ultimately, it comes down to how resilient is the system. And so having paper ballots is part of being resilient. Having paper poll books for those places that have electronic poll books is part of the resilience. Knowing how to use provisional ballots if there's a problem with a voter registration system is part of being resilient. And so I think part of the job is learning that there will be some bad guys or there will be some mistakes that are successful, and the election will end up nonetheless being a success to the degree that election officials are prepared for the bad things that could happen and are practiced with rolling out these resilience or backup plans as soon as they can.
You know, Charles, we do a lot of things online, including sensitive financial transactions. And Ben and Stephen's point wanted to know whether online voting is an option, because so many people don't vote for various reasons. That might encourage more participation. But how confident would you feel as someone who looks at this issue in having online voting?
Online voting is something that may happen in the future, but the way things are right now, it's not ready for prime time. And this was another one of the findings of this National Academy of Sciences panel that I was on and you made reference to earlier. There's three basic problems with internet voting. Here are the three problems in a nutshell. First of all, the election authority, the election officials, cannot verify with a high degree of certainty that the person on the other end sending in the ballot is in fact that person. The second problem is you as the voter. Right now, as things are, there is no highly secured way of assuring you that your vote was actually received as you cast it. And then finally, there are ways of intercepting communications or interfering with the communication between the voter and the central voter office. And so those are three really big obstacles that computer science hasn't solved yet. People are working on those problems. But as of yet, we've not jumped over those hurdles. And when I talk to computer science friends and colleagues, and I think we're probably decades away of secure and reliable internet voting.
And actually, it's interesting that you said about that transmission of the data, because Mark and Sun Prairie called to say that he understands security of polling sites, but he wants to know how those numbers are counted, then passed on to the broader collection site. He says it's the passing on of data that he's concerned about. Briefly, is Mark right to be worried?
One needs to be concerned about that, and proper election administration takes that into account. It should be noted that in most places, and I'm pretty sure this is true in Wisconsin, that the official vote totals are moved physically from the precinct to the town or to the county. And so there may be unofficial returns that are transmitted by the internet or by telephone, but those are only unofficial returns. The official returns in general in most parts of the country are moved physically by a piece of paper or other physical medium.
Well, Charles, a lot to cover here. We didn't get to it all, but thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, my pleasure.
Charles Stewart is a professor of political science at MIT and founder of MIT's Election Data and Science Lab. We talked about how different states are working to protect the integrity of next week's election. As the race for U.S. Senate winds down, Republican Leah Vukmir continues to attack Democrat Tammy Baldwin's response to the Thoma VA scandal. It's been the focus of her race from start to finish, provoking sometimes emotional reactions from those with connections to the VA and from Baldwin herself. Wisconsin Public Radio's Hope Kerwin reports on how we got here.
Earlier this month, Republican U.S. Senate candidate Leah Vukmir held a roundtable for veterans in Thoma.
It's of particular interest, being that we're here in Thoma, that I would really like to hear your perspectives if you have experiences in with the Thoma VA.
The Thoma VA Medical Center was thrust into the spotlight almost 4 years ago when investigations into the facility found widespread problems with overprescribing opioids and other pain medications. Vukmir has made this issue a central point of her campaign against Democratic U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin.
I have felt very strongly that she let you down at the Thoma VA, and the extent to which she ignored that whistleblower report and how unaccountable she was. And I feel that if she was not accountable to the veterans, then how can she be accountable to the rest of our state?
Vukmir's allegations begin with the death of Jason Simkuski. Simkuski was a Marine Corps veteran who died at the Thoma VA in 2014. An investigation by the VA's Office of Inspector General would eventually reveal that Simkuski died from a mixture of drugs prescribed by VA doctors. Shortly after, the Center for Investigative Reporting published a story about Simkuski and the rising number of opioid prescriptions written at the Thoma Medical Center. Baldwin was one of several federal lawmakers from Wisconsin who responded to the story by calling for a federal investigation. She was also criticized when news reports found she and other lawmakers had received complaints about overprescribing from a Thoma VA employee more than 3 months earlier. Baldwin has admitted her office initially mishandled its response to the whistleblower's allegations. That hasn't stopped Vukmir from bringing it up. She pressured Baldwin about the issue when the senator was speaking at a debate earlier this month.
There were mistakes in communication, and I
After
fixed them.
Months.
I fixed them. That is not true.
Baldwin points to a bill she authored with the family of Jason Simkuski as her record on veterans' health care. Called Jason's Law, the legislation created strict standards for prescribing opioids in the VA health system and requires the agency to pursue alternative treatments for pain. And the senator has largely dismissed her opponent's claims as nothing more than a political attack.
This is an attempt to politicize veterans' issues. It's an attempt to make a political issue out of the care that our veterans have earned and deserved. We ought to all be working together to improve that.
Those involved in bringing the Thoma VA scandal to light are split on whether Baldwin did enough. The whistleblower, Ryan Honnell, has continued to criticize the senator. Honnell did not respond to an interview request for this story, but he told the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel earlier this month that it's immoral to vote for Baldwin in this year's election. The family of Jason Simkuski has rallied behind Baldwin. Jason's parents and his widow, Heather Simkuski, recorded ads defending the senator.
When I see these attack ads against Tammy Baldwin using Jason's death, I think it's shameful. Tammy has literally been there with us every step of the way for 3 years.
Vukmir has not relented. She sent a tweet calling Baldwin Princess Painkiller this week, keeping Toma front and center in her race for U.S. Senate. Baldwin, whose mother struggled with addiction, again pushed back. Her campaign called the tweet despicable and a sign of a, quote, flailing, desperate candidate. Hope Kerwin, Wisconsin Public Radio.
Join WPR Tuesday night, November 6th, for live election coverage. NPR reports on national races starting at 7, and when polls in Wisconsin close at 8, Sean Johnson, Frederica Freiberg, and Rob Ferret will anchor WPR's coverage of statewide elections, including the races for governor and U.S. senator. We'll be here throughout the night with election results and analysis. That's live election night coverage starting at 7 on WPR, and tune in to Central Time and the morning show the day after the election for analysis and results. Coming up tomorrow on Central Time, new research indicates that not exercising can be worse for your health than heart disease, diabetes, and other serious health concerns. We'll find out why. Eating alone doesn't have to mean cereal for dinner. For Food Friday, we'll get advice on how to cook delicious meals for one. After the Trump administration made moves to discharge immigrant military recruits, some say their loyalty is being questioned. We'll get the details. And WPR Capitol Bureau Chief Sean Johnson gives us an overview of Tuesday's election in Wisconsin, including results of this week's Marquette Law School poll, which show Tony Evers and Scott Walker in a dead heat. All that and more coming up tomorrow on Central Time.